Connectionist's next.
Major funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. President George Bush is unveiling his economic stimulus plan later today. At its center, a plan to cut the taxes on dividends paid to shareholders. Even his own people are saying it's a dramatic, bold, audacious proposal. They're not denying that this policy will benefit the upper class. Let's call it the oak tree theory of economic growth. Two politicians walk into a dry forest. Each one has a pail of water. The Democrat walks around sprinkling a little bit of water on each tree, maybe even a bit extra for the smaller ones. The Republican takes the water and dumps most of it on the big, healthy oak trees, confident that in the long run, it's these big, healthy trees that'll produce the acorns to sustain the forest. The different irrigation strategies represent a difference in philosophy. Whether tax relief should help each and every citizen or the economy as a whole. Connection listeners, we're talking about taxes this hour, specifically the wisdom of cutting taxes on the dividends paid to shareholders. Will it help you? Is it the best way to get the economy going? And philosophically speaking, should taxes be used primarily to power the economy or to help those most in need? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we have leading authorities on both sides of this issue joining us today. But first, a bit more on the details of the Bush plan. We'll go first to Jonathan Weissman. He's an economic policy reporter with The Washington Post. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello. How are you?
Fine, thanks. In simple terms, Jonathan, how does the new tax work?
Well, the centerpiece is the dividend reduction. It is by no means the only part of this this tax package.
Right.
But the cut, once the elimination of taxation on dividends, works like this. Let's say I own a share of, you know, a major corporation. Major corporations are generally the ones that pay dividends, Procter & Gamble. And every year my shares pay out, let's say, $2,000 in dividends. The dividends are simply the profits that corporations collect and then redistribute to shareholders as their share of the profits. Remember, shareholders mm-hmm. are owners of the company. When I get my $2,000 in dividends, that is taxed right now as income. If I am very affluent and I'm in the 38.5% upper tax bracket, my dividend income will be taxed at 38.5%. If under the Bush proposal, it will not be taxed at all.
Now, we heard running up to this, speaking again just specifically about this one proposal, that there were a lot of people within the Republican Party saying, whoa, we can't do away with the tax altogether. Maybe we'll cut it in half or something. What was it that led the president to say, heck, let's just dump the whole thing?
Well, it's very interesting. It's kind of difficult to say. One factor was getting rid of Paul O'Neill. When the Treasury Secretary was sacked, out went the most cautious member of the economic team. O'Neill had been arguing that any tax package should be fairly modest, should be targeted only to the sectors of the economy that are doing particularly badly. The economy, after all, is not actually in a recession right now. That it should be relatively cheap because if things are needed in the future, if tax cuts are needed in the future, in the event that the economy really does dive, he didn't want the fiscal situation to be so dire that they would be restrained to do so. When O'Neill left, Bush actually had something to prove, and it's funny because his biggest critics when he did replace O'Neill were conservatives who were saying that the new team was going to be too cautious, and the president is showing that he is not going to be cautious with this new team.
Is this going to be a tough one for them to defend, Jonathan?
He's got a Republican Senate, he's got a Republican House. It's not going to be terribly tough to defend. His problem might be that a lot of corporations, especially high-tech companies, big high-tech companies like Microsoft, don't like to pay dividends. They believe that profits that they get are best reinvested within the corporation, mm-hmm. and that their shareholders would rather see stock prices rise than dividends paid out. And
now there's going to be pressure on them to pay it as dividends.
There's going to be pressure to pay it out as dividends, and I think that a lot of high-tech lobbyists are going to be whispering to Republican friends on Capitol Hill that, hey, if you're going to spend $300 billion on tax cuts, I think we can come up with some better ways to do it.
Jonathan, stick around for a minute if you can. I want to bring my other guests in. In the studio here with me, Robert Reich. He's a professor of social and economic policy at Brandeis University, served as Secretary of Labor during President Clinton's first term. Bob,
Dick,
welcome to the program.
Grover
Norquist is also with us. He's president of Americans for Tax Reform, a coalition of taxpayer groups, individuals, and businesses. The coalition's opposed to higher taxes at all levels. Hi, Grover.
How are you doing? Glad to be with you.
Let me start with you. You've heard the accusations that this particular aspect of the tax policy favors the rich. In your view, is that accurate or is it good for everyone?
It is an argument made by very old people who remember a day when the only people in the country who owned shares of stock were Teddy Kennedy and Nelson Rockefeller. And they missed, the last 40 years of American history where we went. I'll go back 20 years when Reagan was elected. 20% of Americans own shares of stock. Today it's over 50%. And Bill Clinton's pollster told me that 70% of the people who voted on Election Day in 2002 were shareholders. So when you hear somebody say, only rich people get dividends, only rich people own shares of stock, you're talking to a very old person who hasn't been around for the last 20 years.
Doesn't necessarily mean that the 70% of the people are all getting dividends from the shares that they hold, though, does it?
Well, correct, but why? As you pointed out, Microsoft, many other companies, don't pay out dividends because we have a tax policy, which, heck, when I was at Harvard, they used to tell us, we have a very stupid policy. We double tax dividend income, and that means companies have more debt, and that's why companies go bankrupt. And in a perfect world, even all the liberals at Harvard were saying we shouldn't double tax dividend income. John Kerry from Massachusetts was saying, when he announced he was going to run for president, said, we had to move away from double taxing dividend income. The president, taking the lead of John Kerry here, has agreed to make this national policy and probably listening to all those Harvard professors. But agreeing with those people who say, if you double tax dividend income, you make corporate America more reliant on debt, less on equity, and companies like Microsoft and others. I think Microsoft, Intel, Cisco, and Dell together have $80 billion in cash that they're sitting on. They don't pay it out in dividends because if they do, the government steals 40% from their constituents, from their investors. So they reinvest it themselves rather than allowing individuals to have it and reinvest it. This will make the economy more efficient. It will eliminate an unfair double taxation of one sector of the economy. It's going to be good for the economy, and it's also just.
Okay, Bob Reich, good for the economy, a just policy, something that is reflecting the modern economy?
It's not good for the economy. It's not going to stimulate the economy. Right now, the biggest economic challenge we have, Dick, is that we've got too much capacity, too many plants that are not being fully utilized, about 75% utilization of our factories. We've got too many people who are unemployed. We've got too much equipment that is just sitting around idle. This is an economy that's struggling to come out of a recession. Officially, not in a recession, but one of the most anemic recoveries on record. And so when we talk about stimulus, what we're really talking about is getting people to buy more, spending more. Now, we can have all of the debate we want over whether double taxation of dividends is a good idea. I personally think that it is, and I think that this current proposal is a tremendous sop to the rich, soak the poor, and reward the rich, reverse riding, kind of Robin Hood strategy. That's what this administration is all about. But when it comes to the economy and whether it's going to stimulate the economy, I don't think there is any debate. It is not going to stimulate the economy. It's not going to stimulate more spending. Let me just follow this through. Most of the benefits of this are going to people who don't have 401k plans. That is, if you already have a 401k plan, if you already have your shares of stock in a retirement plan that is tax-sheltered, you're not going to benefit from this. The only people who are going to benefit from this proposal are people who are very wealthy. And I won't go through all of the studies with you and bore your listeners, but most of the studies, in fact, virtually all that have been quoted from very independent sources, show that the big winners here are very wealthy people. Now, very wealthy people already spend as much as they want to spend. Giving them a little bit more money is not going to give them a greater inducement to spend more.
So you're saying that the money should be given to the middle class, the lower class, the people who will take the money and spend it immediately?
Absolutely. If we're talking about a tax cut, let's have a tax cut for people who are likely to use the tax cut to buy more goods and services and therefore get the economy going. Now, my favorite one, and I don't know whether Mr. Norquist agrees with me on this, would be exempting the first, say, $15,000 or $20,000 of income from the payroll tax. Now, most Americans pay more in payroll taxes than they do in income taxes. You don't hear President Bush talk about the payroll tax very much, but certainly on the tax side, it is very regressive. You pay a payroll tax on the first dollar of income all the way up to $84,000, and then you're free. I mean, Bill Gates, on January 1st, about 3 minutes past midnight, is finished paying his payroll taxes for the year. It would be a good tax cut. It would put more money in a lot of people's pockets, and they would go spend it, because, after all, moderate income people are more likely to spend that additional dollar of income, and that would stimulate the economy.
Jonathan Wiseman, just back to you for a sense from your perspective of how dramatic a shift we're looking at here, with President Bush talking about this $600 billion tax being removed from the dividends paid to shareholders. Is he taking a big turn in one direction?
Well, the dividend part of this is about $300 billion. But remember, just 2 weeks ago, the whole package was $300 billion.
Right.
It's now $674 billion. He has obviously decided to go bold on this thing. He doesn't particularly seem worried about the numbers and how what's going to happen to the budget deficit. Their line repeated often is that growth does not come from budget surpluses. Surpluses come from growth, and this will cause growth. But he has decided to kind of go big. Some of the Senate aides that I've been talking to through the course of the last 3 months on this thing were kind of surprised, because it happened very abruptly. I mean, in some ways, it happened because Bush was always arguing against the double taxation of dividends, and it came about that he personally said, well, look, if we're going to argue against the double taxation of dividends, how can we have any taxes at all? It's kind of like the elimination of the estate tax versus the reform of the estate tax. You have to eliminate the death tax. You don't just reform it. He has decided to take a pretty dramatic turn here.
All right, Jonathan, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Jonathan Wiseman is an economic policy reporter with The Washington Post. Connection listeners, we're talking about the centerpiece of President Bush's new tax plan. It is removing the tax on dividends paid to shareholders, and we're interested in finding out whether or not that affects you, what your opinion is of the shift in policy that the president will be promoting later today in Chicago. We have with us Robert Reich and Grover Norquist to help us through the different perspectives of it. We'd also like to hear from you. Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening. listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. With me in the studio, Robert Reich. He's one of the founders of the liberal magazine, The American Prospect, and a professor of social and economic policy at Brandeis University. Grover Norquist is joining us from our studios in Washington. He writes a monthly politics column for the American Enterprise Institute magazine. He's also president of Americans for Tax Reform. Grover, let me start again with you, if I can. Tell me, if you can do it in simple language, why this particular tax cut benefits everyone in the country, not just the people who might hold those stock and be clipping the coupons, getting their benefits, or the dividends. Why it benefits the whole economy?
First of all, it's always wrong to have discriminatory taxation, and this double tax is one area in the economy. The present law discriminates against companies investing with equity, with stocks, and encourages them, because of our tax policy, to be heavier on debt, which is why companies go bankrupt when you have a downturn. And so moving away from the over-reliance on debt and allowing more equity, getting rid of the discrimination, is important. Second, equity is always important. You shouldn't double tax anyone. Third, the goal of President Bush is to make everyone in America have the opportunity to be an investor in their own future. That's one of the reasons he wants to reform Social Security, which is, as Robert Reich points out, is a terribly regressive tax, a rotten deal for young people. You're better off putting your money in a mattress than in Social Security.
How does it stimulate the economy? That's what I'm trying to get at.
Oh, well, a couple of things. One, it would put $20 billion this year, this coming year, into people's pockets, and $364 billion over the next 10 years. So it's a rather significant amount of resources that otherwise would be taken away by the government that will remain in the hands of the American people for them to make decisions on how to spend it or save it or invest it rather than have the government. Second, when you eliminate this double taxation on dividend income, share prices go up because the value of General Motors or Microsoft or any other company is based on people's after-tax returns, partially from the appreciation of stocks, partially from dividends. And so eliminating the double taxation of dividends will make all stock prices go up. People suggest between 10 and 20% rise in the stock price. Certainly since this has been discussed, stock prices have started going up again, and that creates hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars of wealth.
And Robert Reich, that's something new in economic policy, to actually try and create economic stimulus directly through the stock market in this way, is it not?
Well, that's the point. It's not a direct way of stimulating. You say it's something new. It's something bizarre.
Right.
We've never talked about stimulating the economy through the stock market. The stock market is not the economy. There is Wall Street, and then there is Main Street. There are a lot of people now who own shares of stock. Most of them owe it through their pension plans and their 401ks. As I said before, this particular proposal that the president is now touting has nothing to do with most of the people who own stock through their 401ks because they are already sheltered from taxes.
So Mr. Reich, what's going to happen with this? Is it going to fail? Is the economy not going to be stimulated?
It's steroid treatment for the stock market. The stock market may go up a little bit. It went up some yesterday. Those people, again, who have a lot of stocks, and the people who have a lot of stocks are very rich. Most of the stocks are held by people who are very rich. It's true that a lot of us own shares of stocks through our pension plans, but in terms of where where shares are concentrated, they are concentrated among the top 2-3% of income earners and wealth holders in this country, and they will see a little bump up in their shares of stock and in their wealth and in their perhaps their income if they get dividends. But that's about it. That's not going to trickle down. This is the most absurd form of trickle-down economics. Even if you believed in trickle-down economics, you've got to do a very elaborate mental gymnastic in order to figure out how this sort of stock break for the very wealthy in terms of ending taxes on their dividends is going to somehow trickle down to the real economy.
Grover,
it won't.
You're hearing the first volleys in the political debate that we will hear over this. How easy is this one going to be for the president to defend?
I couldn't be happier. I am so delighted that the left is mired in 1930s East German class warfare worldview. The politics of hate and envy is so old in this country. It is so not successful.
What do you mean by hate and envy?
The whole idea that, well, we can't cut taxes for everybody because somebody over there, for instance, 50% of dividends go to people over 65. This is actually a pro-elderly, pro-retired person tax cut. And when Tom Daschle announced before the president, he even explained what the plan was, that this was a tax cut for, quote, the wrong people. I am delighted to hear that Tom Daschle believes that people over 65 are the wrong people, that 70% of American voters are the wrong people.
You're a supporter of the flat tax, right?
So, well, I'm certainly willing. I don't want to get into the flat tax, but the idea is
that you're saying Americans should pay exactly the same percentage of their income in tax regardless of their level of income. Is that right?
Right. Somebody who makes twice as much money would pay twice as much taxes.
And Bob, what you're saying is that tax policy is supposed to be not necessarily an equal amount of money, but an equal sacrifice?
Equal sacrifice. Even Adam Smith, in his great tome, The Wealth of Nations, quoted by most conservatives again and again, said that we should have, societies should have a progressive tax. Those who earn a great deal of money, on the principle of equal sacrifice, ought to be paying a higher percentage of their income as taxes than people who are of more modest means. The administration would like this to become a class warfare kind of debate, but let's get back to the real economy. How are we going to stimulate this economy? There is no way. In fact, Mr. Norquist has gone out of his way to avoid answering your question. There's no way that this particular tax break is going to, over the next year, and this is when we need the stimulus, going to get a lot more spending stimulated. Put to one side this extraordinary boon to the top 1%. Let's put to one side the fact that we are already living in a society that is growing more unequal. In fact, we have levels of inequality today roughly comparable to the 1920s. Put aside the fact that we are the most unequal society of all advanced industrial countries. Put aside all of that and just simply stick to the basic question of how we're going to stimulate this economy over the next year and get out of the post-recession jobless recovery that could go into a deflationary cycle. And you still come up with a big question mark about this proposal.
Let's hear from our listeners. We're going to go first to Boston. Mike's joining us. Hi, Mike.
Hi, gentlemen.
Thanks for calling.
You bet.
What do you think?
I just want to make one point. I'm in the investment manager business. I understand this discussion quite well. I'm not sort of picking sides as to who should get the tax cut or not. I'm more in the economic efficiency perspective and camp. And that is that, I mean, I liken the dividend tax cuts, dividend taxes, rather, to someone who goes to their ATM and transfers $1,000 from their savings account to their checking account, and having the government simply say, well, give me 38% of that, please. If, as shareholders, someone already owns a share of the company, the profits of that company have already been taxed. As a shareholder, that effectively means you've been taxed. So all you're doing is taking money that you've already paid taxes on it, transferring it from one pocket to the next, having the government come in and say, you know, give me a third or a fourth of that. That's very, very inefficient economic theory.
But what you're talking about is a specific issue of fairness as it affects some taxpayers. We're not talking in larger terms about economic stimulation necessarily.
Well, yeah, exactly. I have certainly feelings about that, but I think economically what improving the cost of capital or simply raising stock prices or lowering the cost of paying dividends does for companies, which is, by the way, where this significant recession has come from. It hasn't been consumers. It's not the consumers that need to spend more. Heaven knows we've been spending enough as a consumer nation. It's the corporate side of the world that has had exceptional difficulties. And that's what this is targeted for. It's targeted to what's called in economics, lowering the cost of capital, lowering the cost of the money that companies need to use to grow and to build and to create more capital, which is what our system is built on.
Mike's making the case, Bob Rush, that this is going to boost the economy.
Mike, the problem with the notion that somehow companies are going to get great benefits out of this proposal is that right now companies, as I'm sure you know, are suffering from underutilization of their current productive capacity, factories, equipment, a lot of people unemployed. And companies are not going to, businesses in this country are not going to invest a lot more in capital equipment until they know that consumers are going to buy all the goods and services that that capital can produce. Right now, the cost of capital, if you want to go out and buy a, get a loan from a bank and add space or more equipment to your business, you can do it at rock-bottom rates. That's not the problem right now. The problem is lack of adequate demand. It's the demand side. Two-thirds of the purchases in this economy come from consumers. So when you say you're not concerned about consumers, that really is the core issue. We've got to get consumers to spend more. Consumer confidence is plummeting. Six out of the last 7 months, we've seen a decline in consumer confidence, and Christmas was a complete failure in terms of retail stores. That is the issue, getting more money into more people's pockets.
But Professor Rice, that's a shibboleth in a lot of ways. The consumer has actually been exceptionally strong through this whole process. Unemployment is at 6%. Which is 5-7 years ago, we would have thought that would have been terrific. So unemployment actually is reasonably good right now. The consumer has bought more cars. Housing is as strong as it's ever been. The Federal Reserve has seen to that, by the way. The consumer is not the problem with the economy. Unemployment is not the problem with the economy. The difficulty we're having is a corporate profits recession that we haven't seen since 20, 30 years, and that's really the issue. And I think to paint it in terms of a consumer recession is really not calling it quite as it truly is.
All right, Mike, thanks for your call. 1-800-423-8255. And next to Charleston, South Carolina, Phil's joining us. Hi, Phil. Phil, are you there? We seem to have lost that connection, so we'll try. Lincoln, Massachusetts. And Sam, are you with us?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead, Sam.
My request, first of all, is that if both of the guests could put their comments in terms of means and ends, because it seems like we're starting with the means but not talking about the ends. So my question first, and then I'll make a comment, is that what's the end for the tax cut? Why are we having the tax cut? What's the goal of the tax cut?
You mean whether it is stimulating the economy or putting...
What's the goal? I mean, usually when I do something, I have a goal, and then I figure out how to achieve the goal. And it seems like a lot of these conversations starts with how to achieve something, but we never talk about what we're trying to achieve.
Okay, Sam, just stay with me. I'm going to let Grover Norquist answer that, the first part of your question.
Yeah, it's a very good question, and there's a short-term and a long-term answer to it. Short-term is to strengthen the economy, create more jobs, create more wealth in the economy, to increase the entire wealth in the nation, the economic growth of the nation, and the number of jobs in the nation. The president is cutting taxes to do that. It's a $100 billion tax cut the first year. You want to talk about what will stimulate the economy. This is, in the overall tax package, $100 billion in consumers' pockets this year. Very helpful, very important. But in addition, the president is moving us towards fundamental tax reform where we don't double and triple tax income, therefore abolishing the death tax, therefore getting rid of the double taxation of dividend income. So there's a short-term economic growth, strength, jobs, wealth creation, income producing, and long-term moving towards fundamental tax reform.
Sam, is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, it's the kind of like voodoo talk. It's the reason why most people don't understand these programs. You know, is it a jobs program? I can certainly say how it will increase wealth because the tax is on wealth. It's not an income tax. It's a wealth tax. People who buy stocks are people who have extra money, money that they don't need to live on. I mean, you don't have to be a college economics professor to figure that one out. Either that or they have a retirement plan where the money is taken out many times involuntarily. You have to partake of some sort of retirement plan. It's a package deal. So I understand how it increases wealth, but the key point is it increases wealth for a certain person. It's a person who already has wealth. So it doesn't create new wealth. It just increases wealth for people who already have wealth. And I'm making a distinction between wealth and income, money that you earn from doing work as opposed to wealth. And I don't understand how he's saying it's a jobs program. How is this going to create jobs? It's not, if you want to create jobs, why not have a jobs program?
Well, in fairness to the president, there are other aspects to the tax plan that he's announcing.
We're responding just to your guest's comments.
No.
He said it's going to create jobs, increase wealth, and then the double tax and the triple tax thing. You know, that's another thing that the average person just doesn't understand. I mean, I'm double taxed all the time. It's like one big shell game. You know, where are we moving it around? You know,
actually, people do understand it. It doesn't
bother me that there's sales tax. It doesn't bother me that there's a. It's just a shell game. You know, so how? What's all this code talk about?
Sam,
who gives a darn about whether you're double taxed or triple taxed or quadruple taxed?
Yeah, Sam, this is Bob Reich. I agree with you. I think this is a big sham. It's not going to stimulate the economy. And the short-term objective, let's be very clear on it. The reason we're having so much trouble coming out of this recession, and we are having trouble, this is an anemic recovery. This is a jobless recovery. Unemployment is going up. The reason we're having so much trouble is we have too much productive capacity relative to demand. Let me repeat that, because this is the core immediate issue. We've got too many factories, too much equipment, too much high technology, too much telecom equipment, too many people who are unemployed relative to the actual purchasing willingness and ability of a lot of people out there right now. Now, as long as you have that overhang, too much capacity relative to demand, you're going to have a very sluggish recovery. In fact, we could find ourselves next year in a recession or a something that is even worse than a recession, a kind of a situation where prices are declining and joblessness is increasing.
Let me
so
just
we've
stop
got to
you
stimulate...
there, if I can, for a minute, Bob, because I haven't yet heard Grover answer this point that you've made a couple of times now, that we need to take tax money, we need to put it into the pockets of the people who are eager to spend that money.
It's all about spending.
Grover?
Well, no, it's not all about spending. It's about freedom. See, the president isn't into micromanaging the economy. He isn't a socialist. He isn't a Democrat. He says, look, the government is not going to steal your dollar. It's going to leave it in your pocket. And you know what you want to do with it? That's your decision. You want to invest it. You want to spend it. You want to invest part of it, spend part of it. Freedom is what this country's about, and it's what this president's about. Now, freer people making freer decisions, as we discover when you look at North and South Korea, East and West, Germany, Europe, and the United States, freer countries have more economic growth. Freer countries create more jobs and more opportunities because the free market works and government-directed economies don't work. And so that's why when you give people more freedom and let them make the decisions, they make better decisions than bureaucrats in Washington or in Phnom Penh.
So, Connection listeners, when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about the decisions that you want to make and whether or not the policy that you're hearing from Washington, both from the Democrats and from the Republicans, is leading you to this sense of freedom that Grover Norquist is talking about, or a sense of redistribution and fairness that Bob Reich is talking about. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston, RG.
Taxes. That's what we're talking about today on The Connection. My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to National Public Radio. Joining us from our studio in Washington, Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform. He serves on the board of the American Conservative Union. With me in the studio in Boston, Robert Reich, professor of social and economic policy at Brandeis University. Freedom, Robert Reich.
Freedom.
That's what it's about.
We all want freedom. But, you know, again, there's a short-term issue of stimulating the economy. Then there's a long-term philosophical question here. And when I hear people like Grover Norquist talking about freedom and accusing people like me of being socialists or communists,
but
or
what's
North
wrong
Koreans,
with the, it's my money?
I mean, well,
theory.
It's first of all, we understand in this country, and more people are understanding, that we do have to have a tax system. Taxes are necessary to pay for everything from the military, if we want to defend ourselves, to police officers, to our court system, to everything
schools,
else.
To parks, to highways.
That,
and
really, it's the price we pay, as Oliver Wendell Holmes said, for a civilized society. The question is, who is going to pay the taxes? What is a fair incidence of tax? Now, between 1979 and now, the after-tax income of the top 1% of families, these are families with more than $1 million a year,
the last 20 years,
rose 157%. Now, that's the after-tax income.
That's supposed to be good news, isn't it?
Well, that's great news, but the middle family, that's the great bulk of people and families in the middle, their after-tax income rose only about 8%. And if you're in the bottom fifth, you actually saw your after-tax income decline. So we are faced with a situation in which, although the tax code is relatively progressive on the income side, if you look at liquor taxes and cigarette taxes and payroll taxes and sales taxes in general, you find that overall the tax code is not terribly progressive.
But isn't it the Democrats who like the liquor taxes and the cigarette taxes and the payroll taxes?
Well, I, for one, think that it's very regressive. And to label all Democrats, you know, Democrats live in a very big tent. So let's not assume that all Democrats believe exactly the same thing. Lotteries are also a very regressive way of raising revenue for the government. If you look, for example, the payroll tax, which I've been talking about, at the end of World War II, 2% of all of the tax revenues to the federal government came from the payroll tax. Now it's 37% of tax revenues to the federal government come from the payroll tax, which is quite regressive. As I said before, you pay it on your first dollar of income all the way up to $84,000. So let's really talk about who pays the taxes and whether taxes are fair. Now, this is a different conversation than the one we were having before about how best to stimulate the economy over the next year. Now, granted, we're moving to a different conversation. I'm happy to have that conversation, but let's at least agree that this plan that the Bush administration is putting out has little or nothing to do with the first objective, which is stimulating the economy. Now, let's ask whether it is fair, whether it really deals with widening inequality and the issue of who pays. And let's do it without talking about these silly charges of socialism or North Korea fascism or who's being free and who's not free. Let's have a practical discussion about who pays what to maintain our society.
We will hear momentarily from Grover Norquist on that, but I do want to go back to our callers who have been very patient, to Mel, who's standing by in Danvers, Massachusetts. Hi, Mel.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Great, thanks for my call. Unemployed. I've been out of the high-tech industry now for several months. Have many, many friends in the same industry, in the same situation. We don't need tax cuts. We need jobs, and we need good-paying jobs. That will stimulate the economy. That will keep the tax revenues going and make it easier at the federal and state levels to provide the services that we need. My concern is all I ever hear is tax cuts. All I ever hear is Republicans versus Democrats. We need to work together to get the bottom line problem solved, and that's how we create and maintain good jobs. If you look at high tech, we've lost a lot of jobs offshore. Those jobs are back. So I take my answers offline, and again, thank you for taking the call.
Okay, Mel, first to Grover Norquist on this one.
Well, absolutely. Everything that's good to strengthen the economy and create jobs and opportunity works in the direction that the gentleman just asked about. The president's commitment to free trade, I think, is very important in this thing. One of the reasons we throw jobs overseas is we have high tariffs. Other countries respond. And so we have money and jobs get moved overseas behind tariff barriers. So the president's commitment to free trade is a very important part of creating economic jobs. And since tariffs are taxes, something I wish Pat Buchanan would understand, getting rid of tariffs is a reduction in the tax burden. I think very important, the president's proposal. Again, we're focusing on something which is about half of the president's proposal, which is eliminating the double taxation of dividend income. Dividends are taxed twice now. When the president's proposal passes, as it will by June, they'll be taxed once. So it's not that they won't be taxed. They'll only be taxed once instead of twice.
Okay, but if we broaden our look at the president's proposal, he is to announce an extension of unemployment benefits. He is setting aside money for people to look for jobs. But speak, if you can, to Mel about how it is that the tax cut on dividends gets him a job faster than or as fast as any other means.
What it does is it reduces the cost of capital, makes it easier for companies and individuals to invest. When you reduce the cost of something, you get more of it. It reduces the cost of capital. It increases, puts $20 billion into Americans' hands this year alone. So if you're a and you demand-sider. $20 billion is a lot of jobs to put in people's hands, a lot of money to create jobs and to buy things with. So I think all of those are important. The president's proposal also speeds up the reduction in all marginal tax rates to January 1st of this year, rather significant, important tax cut there. And it allows for small businesses to expense the first $75,000 of investment. Very, very helpful, the Small Business Committee tells us, to creating jobs and opportunity and to raising the incomes of people who work now by getting them better tools to work with.
Okay, Barbara, let's talk to Mel for a minute, because when you talk about taking tax money and putting it into the pockets of people like Mel, of people who are looking for work, it doesn't create a job for him. How do you create a job for him?
Well, Mel, the only way that you are going to, and I don't mean you personally, but people who are out of work, particularly in the high-tech sector, the only way they're going to get back to work is if the high-tech sector is revived. Now, the president's proposal with regard to eliminating tax on dividends doesn't really do anything for the high-tech sector, because the high-tech sector doesn't generally provide dividends. They take their earnings and reinvest their earnings. Arguably, that's a much better way of building the economy and growing the economy than simply providing dividends. So what we need to do to get the economy moving is to provide a tax break to average working people, lower wage people, so they will spend more. They will spend more on all sorts of goods and services that utilize technology. We might also expand research and development, both at the state and the local and also the federal level. Education and job skills are critically important. I don't know about you, but many people in high technology need to maybe shift a little bit with regard to the set of skills they have. Technology is changing. Technology is now becoming more of a center of gravity with regard to a lot of the Northeast than, for example, digital and related computer technologies. So we can have a very good discussion about what public policies are most important for getting you another job, but whatever we listed at the end of the list, in fact, might probably not even showing up on the list at all, would be eliminating the tax on dividends.
To Arlington, Massachusetts, and Aram is joining us. Hi, Aram.
Hi. I'd like to argue in favor of keeping taxation of dividends.
Why?
And more generally, to go beyond that, I'd like to argue in favor of government policies explicitly designed to distribute income and wealth more equally.
Well, okay, so let's
Can I give the argument?
Let's just deal with the specifics of the first one. Why keep the tax on the dividends?
Because the tax on the dividends is at least an attempt, albeit a poor one, to redistribute income more equally by preventing it from being concentrated, further concentrated.
And Grover, you're saying that that's a bust. Yeah. That's not going to work. That doesn't work.
Aram's kind of undermining Mr. Reich's argument that we aren't going to get into a fight between freedom and state control of people's lives. Aram thinks that the government should take money from people who earned it and give it to people who didn't earn it, and decide who should be how tall, and people who work on Saturday should have their cars stolen. I mean, we're going to take money from people because they earned it and give it to people who didn't? You know, that's not what this country's about. That is what other countries about. And Aram, if you want to pay double taxes on dividend income, you are free to do so. You just write a check, you send it in. But you're not allowed to go loot your neighbors. Huh?
Perhaps I could make my argument in favor of it.
Aram, I'll just ask you to be brief.
But Aram, you can do it yourself. You don't have to do it to the rest of us.
My argument is relatively simple. We used to lack savings in this country. Now we have plenty of savings. It is all concentrated in the hands of the rich, including the amounts which should be in the paychecks of so many people who are unemployed. We used to have declining productivity. We now have increasing productivity precisely because we are cutting more and more jobs. We have largely solved the savings problem. We have largely, not completely, but in many ways, solved the productivity problem. The problem that now confronts us as an advanced economy is to solve the distribution and income of wealth problem. And I would not look to Mr. Nordquist to do it, because Mr. Nordquist has said that we'd like to drown the American government in a bathtub. So I don't think advice should come from him on this.
All right. I want to see if I can take the point that Aram's making, but also step back a little bit with both of you here. Bob Reich, are we talking about a fairly fundamental shift in tax policy here? Is the Bush administration moving the country away from any kind of redistribution of wealth that was built into or has been over time built into the tax system?
Well, first of all, you've got to understand that the country has been moving toward greater and greater inequality over the last 20 years. This is both pre-tax and after-tax inequality. That's the background condition for a long-term discussion about where we are going. Should the government try to aim for greater equality through the tax system? I think that's completely appropriate. But I think that one other aspect of equality has to be to improve our nation's schools and educational systems for the middle class and the poor. Because no matter how much Grover Norquist wants to talk about freedom, the fundamental issue here over the long term is opportunity. And as long as we as a society are not giving or willing to give our middle and lower middle class, our working class, and our poor families and their children the opportunity to get the education they need to thrive in this new economy, we're going to see after-tax and pre-tax incomes continue to diverge.
So
this is terribly important. Getting poor people the opportunity to educate their kids is very, very important. That's why President Bush and 70 to 80% of African Americans support the idea of school choice. The problem is the teachers' unions won't let the Democrats give these opportunities to black
Let's talk
Americans.
About taxes, though. Let's talk about those issues of fairness and opportunity as managed through the tax system.
But the whole economy, you have both the lack of opportunity because the teachers' unions force black kids to go to government schools and don't let them have the opportunity to go to private schools, as Ted Kennedy's kids have the opportunity to go to.
Taxes.
School choice is very important.
I need you to talk
fund
about
the government
taxes.
Monopoly on education. The tax burden is not only a question of who bears it, but how heavy it is. It was brought up, the government has to do certain things. Well, 3% of the economy goes to the military. 1% goes to cops. 33% is taken by the government. There's a lot of government that you and I pay for involuntarily that has nothing to do with defending the nation or defending your property. So the total tax burden needs to come down.
So not redistribution, no more Mr. Robin Hood.
Well, we've got 33% of the wealth in this country is redistributed right now. That's
I know, but you'd like to see that less, would you not?
I think zero is a good number.
Well, the question, again, if we're getting away from the short-term issue of stimulating the economy, which we have got away from, and it's perfectly fine, there is a long-term issue of what is a just, what is a fair society? What do we owe one another as members of the same society? And now, as we face challenges such as terrorism and war, we have to think seriously about equal sacrifice.
We'll talk more about this in programs to come. Bob Reich, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Dick.
Bob Reich is professor of social and economic policy at Brandeis University. Grover Norquist, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Grover's president of Americans for Tax Reform. It's a coalition of taxpayer groups, individuals, and businesses opposed to higher taxes at all levels. Connection listeners, feel free to continue the conversation on our website at www.theconnection.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. To purchase cassettes and CDs of The Connection, please visit www.theconnection.org or phone 1-800-909-9287.
This is W.